Hello and welcome to Straight Talk. I'm Tim Gordon. There's a lot happening in this country right now, and Oregonians are feeling it, from tariffs to wildfires, affordability, and the war in Iran. What are lawmakers doing in Washington to address these issues? Joining us to discuss all of that and more, Senator Jeff Merkley, first elected to the Oregon House in 1998, including a stint as House Speaker, and then elected to the U.S. Senate in 2008. Senator Merkley also currently serves on several committees, including as the ranking Democrat on the Senate Budget Committee. He served the state of Oregon, at least in an official capacity, for almost 30 years. Senator Merkley, thanks very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good to be with you.
Thanks. And you're in D.C., and here we are in Portland. And I'm going to start with the election. You won your primary last month by a wide margin. Oregon voters gave you a decisive win. What does that tell you about what they're expecting from you in Washington right now? And also, what makes this particular six-year term feel important enough to come back for?
Well, folks are really concerned about the authoritarian takeover of our country. The president's team is savaging the checks and balances of our Constitution. They're extremely concerned about the cost of everything is pressing families to the wall, whether it's gas or groceries or the cost of health care. And certainly, there is enormous concern about the blatant corruption that we've never seen in America, anything like this before. The president investing in stocks right before he issues contracts, selling bogus crypto coins. It's just like people had him a sack of money under the table. It's really extraordinary. And I'm just hearing folks say, on top of all of that, this war, this unnecessary war of choice that has shut down the Strait of Hormuz, that has strengthened the hardliners in Iran, that has hurt the reformers, that has enriched Russia, that has resulted in the death of 13 of our service members and the injury of hundreds. This is insanity. So I'm hearing about all of that.
Well, we're going to dive more into all of that a little later on, but let's go to the fire season. Now, you've got a couple of really hot days coming up here in the Northwest in the next couple of days. Oregon and the Pacific Northwest are heading into what many are predicting will be another severe fire season, and the federal government plays obviously a major role in both prevention and response to that. There's been significant disruption, though, to federal agencies that touch forest management and fire response, Forest Service staffing cuts, for example. How much has that eroded the capacity that was there even a year ago?
Well, I met with the Secretary of Agriculture this morning, and we had the Forest Service chief, and they're claiming that it's not affecting their capacity. But I'm hearing from other parties that this reorganization in the midst of fire season is a massive mistake, and certainly enormous concern because we are the epicenter of the highest risk for this summer. I looked at the charts of likely fires or fire risks going in July and August, and Oregon is 100% red. I mean, there's a little bit of Washington and Idaho around us and so forth, but Oregon's right in the middle of it. I mean, many of our counties in eastern Oregon had 0% snowfall, zero snowfall. I mean, just watersheds without any dampness in the soil. So a lot of concern. We're predicting a hotter, longer summer, and that's with the drought, that means a huge fire season risk.
So what do you do? Do you just take their word for it that they're ready, or what did you tell them today?
Well, we're asking lots of questions and pushing to make sure that they understand the gravity. And I must say, Secretary Rollins has been one of the most forthcoming members of the administration in saying here is what we're doing, and more transparent than other departments. But the reorganization, one of the things we did is as I worked with Senator Murkowski of Alaska. And we got a slowdown on the consolidation of the firefighting teams so that can wait after this fire season. And I mean, that's the sort of thing should have congressional hearings, and it should have consultants' reports. And like, let's get this right. The risk is too high. I've also really pushed the funding for the fire fix. I talked to the secretary about that today. That fire fix means that the Forest Service must not run out of money fighting fires. That's a huge problem. It sounded like they were very willing to work together to take that on. And then we're doing things like trying to pass bills related to the damage of smoke, making sure our Coast Guard and other groups, such as our National Guard, are prepared to help out in fighting the fires.
So from our forests and grasslands to our Pacific Ocean, let's talk about ocean monitoring off the Oregon and Washington coast and federal funding cuts to the National Science Foundation, which now says it will end a huge portion of their monitoring system here as a result. We know that system's been really important in understanding the ocean, weather, and climate change. What are the real-world consequences of this if it goes away?
This is supreme stupidity. We have 900 sensors in the ocean that tell us things like how much salt is in the ocean, salinity, the current directions, the temperature. It also measures algae and phytoplankton. And so the ocean senators from Alaska on down the Pacific coast and from the East Coast are all raising the cry saying, why would you pull those out? It helps us. There's been 500 scientific studies done based on those information from those sensors. It's essential to understanding the fishing conditions. So it's insanity to take them out of the water. But they're saying, well, those sensors are there to provide insight on climate change. And we're not talking about climate change, so we're going to jerk those sensors out of the ocean. So we're saying, hell no. And we're doing everything we can. There's no, certainly this is being done without congressional permission, and we're going to do everything we can to stop it.
What can you do? I mean, is there a way that Congress can protect the system, or is it entirely up to the administration's discretion?
Yes.
Here?
Well, we will try to put a measure on the floor on some must-pass legislation that says you cannot do this. And I think the ocean senators are all united in that. We can try unanimous consent without it being on another bill. So we're putting our heads together saying, and we're weighing with the administration, say, do not pull those out. Wait till we can talk about this in Congress and weigh in, because there is absolutely no justification for doing this. And we're really trying to emphasize the importance to our fishing stakeholders. You know, we got salmon and crab and whiting and groundfish and shrimp and on the East Coast, other variety. I mean, like all these folks in those industries, they want to know what's happening in the ocean.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the Bureau of Land Management oversees millions of acres, as you know, in Oregon, and has seen significant budget and staffing reductions as well. When you look at what's actually happening on the ground in Oregon, BLM cuts, what are you hearing from constituents and what's being lost that's really hard to get back there?
So the BLM budget has not been cut, and I am the lead Democrat on the Interior Spending Committee. But the problem is, even when they have the budget, they're firing people. And that is very hard for us to stop. And essentially, it's a violation of the understanding that the administration's role as an executive branch is supposed to execute the laws as written. And that means if staff is funded, you hire them, you don't fire them. But they're just, it's like a wrecking ball. And the attitude of the head of Office of Management and Budget, he said he basically wanted federal employees to kind of hate themselves so much they would quit their jobs, because they're just treating them terribly. They're offering them buyout contracts. They're saying, if you don't take this contract, you may get fired a few months from now and get nothing. They're reorganizing where people are work, so families are having to move. That's a big problem. Just one stat that sticks in my mind is we've lost 7,000 of our folks in the Forest Service. We've lost 10,000 lawyers who make everything kind of turn the gears. Lawyers may not be the most popular profession in the world, but those folks who are turning the gears to deliver grants and payments and support to our local communities, they're needed.
Yeah. A lot of these staffing cuts affect rural Oregon communities, obviously. They don't always vote Democratic. Are you finding common ground with Republicans on this one?
I'll tell you, you know, as you know, I go to every county every year, and I've already been throughout every county in eastern Oregon, all our rural counties, and they are angry over the tariffs. They are angry just in part because they don't know whether their market will still be there, because there's the tariffs for things you import, but then there's retaliatory tariffs. And then they're angry over the cost of diesel, which is necessary for the farm equipment. And then they're angry over the cost of fertilizer. These things have been profoundly affected by the shutdown of the Strait of Hormuz. And so they're like, what, how is this possibly benefiting anyone? And so there is a very different conversation taking place now than in a normal year.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, look, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk with Senator Merkley about kitchen table issues, some more, the ongoing war in Iran, and a few things in between. So stay with us. And we are back with Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, and we're going to talk about something that so many people are most concerned about, the high cost of things with folks struggling to put food on the table and pay their bills. Senator, when your constituents talk to you about the cost of living, what are they telling you, and what do you see as the federal government's actual role in fixing this?
Well, let's start with the cost of housing. One of the things that's driving it up are the hedge funds, and the hedge funds have been buying up single-family housing across the country. I started ringing the alarm bells on this years ago, and interestingly enough, in his message to Congress this year, State of the Union, President Trump said we need to get private equity out of the single-family housing. So I'm glad to see some adoption of the understanding that that's an issue. Of course, we need to increase the supply of housing as well, and programs that help people with rent and help with first-time ownership. No, home ownership is dying. It's completely dying among people under 40 because it's just unaffordable, and you throw in college debt and current wages and high interest rates. And so that is the major source of wealth for middle-class America has been home ownership. So all of this, why I'm paying so much attention to that because it's big factor. And then we have...
I want to ask you, if you don't mind me interrupting you, just talk about your partnership with Republican Josh Hawley, the Homes for Americans Families Act, that along with some other updated legislation is there to ban big investment groups from buying up single family homes. Where does that stand right now?
So we passed a bill out of the Senate that included the first provision, and it wasn't as strong as my bill, but it did say no more buying single family houses after 2 years. And if hedge funds are building rental housing, they have to sell it for home ownership after, I think it was 5 years. The House of Representatives has struck that out. They've left in place the no more buying after 2 years. But listen, the hedge funds are buying up everything. Your kids' sports clubs, your doctor's clinical practice, the local hospital, everything they possibly can. And it's the accentuation of wealth controlling everything around us, like we're being boxed in by a few mega corporations. And the cost of housing is one. Cost of energy is another. And the cheapest energy is renewable energy. It's 2 cents per kilowatt wholesale for wind or for solar. And this administration has proceeded to block tons of solar and wind projects, driving up costs. And then the Strait of Hormuz shutting that down when we have a world oil market since 2015. And that result is when you shut down the Strait of Hormuz, it's great for America's oil companies because they sell at a much higher world price, but it's terrible for American families. And then, so I have 3 bills related to that, basically saying states can't block renewable energy projects, that the federal government can't use executive orders to block them, and that we are not going to keep driving up the cost of natural gas for folks by exporting more and more LNG, liquid natural gas. And then finally, groceries. Groceries I hear about all the time. People experience it every single week. They buy the same things they're always buying, and they're going, wow, it was $4 and now it's $6. Yeah. How am I going to afford that?
You know, obviously there was a lot of concern about inflation in the Biden administration, but President Trump said he was going to come in and on day one turn that around. That hasn't happened. I mean, where does it go from here? I think people are just wondering what is the solution here. Obviously, the administration pushes tariffs, but if that's not the answer, what is?
Well, the tariffs did drive up prices. The war has driven up prices. And then investing our natural resources in basically ICE and Customs and Border Protection, rather than investing in making healthcare, housing, and education available. I think of the vision of a strong foundation and no ceiling. And a strong foundation means that families will thrive if we have reasonable opportunity on healthcare, housing, education, and a good paying job. But if we're spending our money, and what happened last week? So was a bill, it's a $70 billion bill. That $70 billion, not one penny went to housing, healthcare, education. It all went to ICE and Customs and Border Protection. And here's the thing. they already are sitting on top of $100 billion of unobligated. I mean, it's not only is fund money not spent, it's not even been contracted for. So a totally useless movement of $70 billion out of the Treasury and into the hands of a department that will not use those funds while ignoring the basic needs of American families. This is a families lose, billionaires win philosophy. We need a families thrive and billionaires pay their fair share.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you about that ICE and Border Patrol funding, $70 billion. The Senate passed it. The House narrowly passed it on Wednesday this week. Democrats obviously didn't get what they wanted here. There were guardrails and restrictions you wanted to have put in place, Democrats did, on ICE. Where does that go from here? You still want those things. And a lot of Americans agree with you on that.
That's right. We want ICE and CBP to quit acting like secret police. They're wearing masks. They're not wearing ID. They're driving cars without ID. They're snatching people out of their houses without a warrant. And this is a violation of our Constitution. If you think about how secret police operate around the world, that's the way ICE and CBP are operating in the United States right now. This is unacceptable in a democratic republic. But Trump is trying to create an authoritarian state, and having the military or military-style agents in the streets is a piece of that authoritarian strategy. So we're going to keep raising it. We're going to keep pushing it. We're going to raise it in the campaigns as well as on the halls of Congress.
I think one thing Democrats would probably call a win is that the president wanted his $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund, as he called it, included in that legislation and the ICE funding. That did not happen. Enough Republicans revolted against that. But Trump still wants it. Do you think this is dead or not?
Well, no, it's not dead, because Trump got that money by suing himself and then having the administration award himself $1.8 billion to hand out. I call it cash for cronies. One of my colleagues was calling it cash for cop sailors, folks who attacked the police of Capitol Hill on January 6th. I mean, this is like, can you imagine any corrupt president in the world suing himself, his own administration, to award himself $1.8 billion to hand out to his friends as a way to carve out political influence? I mean, we're very concerned that he'll use that money to basically incentivize people to disrupt the November elections. The November elections are at risk in a way we have never seen in the history of our country. The president is driving gerrymandering. He is threatening to send out enforcers to intimidate people at the polls. He's instructed the states not to use their voter lists, that he'll provide the voter list, which obviously that would be a tremendous violation of our Constitution and basically take away the opportunity to vote for millions of Americans. And so there's a lot tied up in here. But we did have amendments that said this fund could not be utilized or created. Republicans ensured that none of those amendments made it into the bill. We also had amendments that said, listen, this gold-plated ballroom, that's unacceptable. I had that amendment. I had 53 votes, a majority, but I couldn't get 60. Republicans are so afraid to take on the president on these horrendous attack on our Constitution, the mismanagement of federal funds, and they're just intimidated. And we're hoping that after the November election, we'll send such a strong message against Trumpism that my colleagues across the aisle will start to act in the national interest rather than the very timid place they are right now.
Senator, let's move on to something else. It's a big concern for you, and that's the prediction markets and their use in politics, betting on legislative election outcomes. This is pretty new territory. What's the risk here, and what are you doing about it?
Yeah, so I worked with the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to ban these markets. They did ban them under the Biden administration. And then a court decision said, well, we're not sure the Supreme Court will agree that they have that power. They have the power to deny event contracts on gaming, but is betting on an event gaming, or is gaming only sports? So the court basically struck down that effort. And now there is a new Commodity Futures Trading Commission that is all in on accelerating these gambling markets, these prediction markets. And they're enormously corrupt in terms of insider trading, because tons of people always know about what the government action or military action is going to be. And they are very destructive in terms of our elections, because under Citizens United court decision, individuals can spend mega millions on an election without disclosing any of their plans, and they can do it the last minute in smear campaigns. So they can bet on an election, and then they can influence the outcome of the election. So the election, instead of being a decision about who best represents the people to serve them, becomes how do I make money off the bet I've placed. And so I'm extremely disappointed about the court striking down the former Commodity Futures Trading Commission, very concerned. You know, Trump has expressed some concern about this, but meanwhile, his family is deeply invested in the companies that are doing the prediction markets.
It's interesting. I'm not an expert on this, but it feels like this kind of all grew out of the sports betting world that has gotten so huge and is online and seems so pervasive these days. Is that a concern for you just starting there?
Yeah, so the states have had the prerogative of controlling sports betting. And essentially what this does is creates a national sports betting without any legislation ever making this happen, just a decision of the CFT, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. And so the states are going, hey, wait, this is our territory. You don't get to decide this. And states have very different attitudes. Utah doesn't allow any betting at all. So I support states' rights on this question. Once massive amounts of money are made, it's really hard to reverse course, because we now have an election system because of Citizens United where those interests can spend so much money in an individual race. I think back to 2014 when the fossil fuel world didn't like my support for transition to renewables. They came to Oregon. We don't know how much money they spent. We know that they spent somewhere at least north of $5 million. I put up an ad attacking them for coming to Oregon. The crypto world put $40 million into the Ohio Senate race 2 years ago, and that allowed them to easily pass a crypto deregulation bill last year, and now they want another one. And so that money, once it becomes established, it corrupts the electoral process and drives cynicism, legitimate cynicism, among young Americans about whether our democracy is functioning. Right. And so we've got to get our hands around this.
Got it. Just a couple minutes left, and finally, war in Iran, we've got to talk about that. We've heard the president many times that a deal is close. There's been no deal. Polls show this is a very unpopular war, yet it continues without congressional approval. What's your take here?
So the president called this Operation Epic Fury. It should be called Operation Epic Failure. It has strengthened the right wing in Iran. It has hurt the reformers. It's shut down the Strait of Hormuz. It's resulted in the death and injury of American service members. Of course, a huge number of civilians killed in Iran and some of the other locations around the Gulf. Has not recovered the nuclear materials. None of that is good. It's driven up the price of everything here at home, and it's deemed done outside our Constitution. Madison said, we put the question of war with Congress because the executive that is most inclined and prone to war, and that's why with studied care, we have placed the question with Congress, the legislature, and that is being violated every day right now.
And Republicans aren't allowing the War Powers Act to be approved, right?
That's right. We've held, I think, 7 votes, and we did succeed in moving it out of committee on the 7th vote. We will have a motion to proceed to the bill. We only had 50 votes. We need 51 to do that. I hope colleagues will join us in defending the constitutional role. It's really... this question of war is too big for one person to take our nation. That was the wisdom of our founders that's being ignored and trod on right now. Let's pay attention to why they place this power with Congress, and let's exercise that power.
A lot of work to do there in Washington, D.C. We'll let you get back to us, Senator Jeff Merkley. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, and thank you all for joining us as well. A reminder that you can stream Straight Talk on your own schedule. Download the free TV app, KJW Plus, available now on Roku, Apple TV, and Fire TV. We'll see you back here next week.